Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota on Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.
I always tell my students, follow your bliss.
Welcome to Blist, the podcast. I am your host, Patch Drury. We are really glad you're here. We realize you just got done listening to commercials, and nobody enjoys commercials, but we have one more for you. We're grateful that you listen to them. We're grateful to our sponsors because they make all of this possible, they and you. But we've got one more for you, and it's for my business, which is PatchDrury.net, which is it used to be a video production company, but now it's a coaching business. It's maybe a little weird and confusing that we have the same name still, but we're working on that. But I want you to connect it with me and what I do. But basically, we're a coaching service that helps people reinvent themselves. You know, Joseph Campbell famously said that middle age is like getting to the top of a ladder and realizing the ladder has been leaning against the wrong wall the entire time. And I know a lot of people who are at middle age who they're starting their third act and they realize, crap, I don't like what I'm doing. I don't like the life I'm living. And a lot of us make it to adulthood and we still feel like a kid. We still feel kind of lost and unsure of ourselves. I know I went through that. You know, we all assume that after graduating from high school or college that life is going to kind of fit and it's going to be fulfilling and rewarding and we're just going to naturally know how to do those things. And maybe you can relate to that. Maybe you got out of college and high school and then you grew up and you got your job and you just work and you come home and you watch TV and you go to bed and you wake up and you redo it all over again. Or maybe you have a job that you really hate, or maybe you wonder when you stopped being excited about your life. What if I told you that it's possible to live with purpose and direction and excitement? What if I told you it was possible to jump out of bed every morning and be ready to start your day? Imagine being able to set meaningful and achievable goals for yourself, having a clear direction for your life, loving what you do, having a positive effect on everyone you meet, knowing exactly why you exist, being ready for whatever life throws at you, understanding and better controlling your reaction to things, being your own authority in your life, or inspiring others with your life. Can you imagine any of those things right now with your life the way it is? Well, with PatchDrury.net and our coaching techniques, I can teach you to achieve all of those things. I spent over 40 years exploring spirituality, trying to figure God and the universe out, and I'm eager to share what I've discovered throughout those 40 years. My coaching system and what I do, it dips into a lot of areas. You know from listening to this podcast, I talk about Joseph Campbell and the work of Carl Jung a lot. I'm also involved in NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, and I've put this system together after years of longing to find a direction for my own life, one that felt spiritually significant and fulfilling, and I have finally found it. You know, we all grow up being told we're not good enough, or we can't be our own authorities, that we can't design and direct our own lives because we're too sinful, or we come from the wrong family, or we just don't have what it takes. And I'm here to tell you that all of that is bullshit. And in a six-week coaching program, I will help you turn your lack of direction and enthusiasm into a goal-driven life full of purpose that you love. And that seems like a lot. It seems like I'm offering a lot. But this is not just my creation, but it's me taking the work of a lot of experts, a lot of stellar minds, and condensing it with some of my own. And I really feel confident that we can do this for you. So if you are interested, if you feel like you've stalled and you're a little confused about the direction your life is supposed to take, and you're ready to be your own authority and launch out onto your own, then email me at patchdrury@gmail.com. And what we'll do is we'll meet for 30 minutes free of charge and decide if we're a good fit. Because you may talk to me and be like, nope, you suck. I don't want to talk to you. Or I may talk to you and decide, nope, you suck. I don't want to work with you. But we'll both have the freedom to walk away from that. But at any rate, that's the commercial. It's over. Thank you for listening. And then let's get into the episode. We got a lot to talk about this episode. First thing, kind of unusual, I have some sex advice for you as my listener. We want to be an all-purpose repository of knowledge, and so I want to share some sex advice with you. It was my birthday recently, and for my birthday, my wife had planned to take me to dinner with some friends, then go get some drinks at a local bar, and then we were going to go to a bed, or not a bed and breakfast, an Airbnb in Paris. And when you get to be my age, I just turned 45, you realize special event, going out of town, staying somewhere unusual, just you and your wife, that means sex is going to happen. You've learned to look for the signs. It's like the first crocus of spring that tells you better days are coming. Well, when it's your birthday and you're going out of town to stay somewhere, you know sex is coming. And so I've been in that situation many times in my married life. And a lot of those times I don't end up getting the sex because I open my mouth and I screw it up. And so in those situations, that's really the only way you can avoid the sex is by opening your mouth and screwing it up. And my wife and I have been married for 10 years in July. And so because of that, we've had our fair share of disagreements and fights. And so we've learned to kind of navigate each other. But for whatever reason, I have found myself literally unclothed in bed next to her. And then I say the wrong thing and the whole thing goes away. And so I was determined not to let this happen this time. So what I did was I decided I'm not going to express any of my opinions on my birthday. I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. If my wife wakes up and the first thing she says is, man, you've got a big stupid head and you're an idiot, I was going to be like, oh, well, thanks for that insight. I'll think about that. You're probably correct. I was just going to take it. And it's not that I don't believe in my opinions. It's not that I don't believe in expressing them. But I do believe you have to decide what's important to you in the moment. And in that moment, I decided being right was not the most important thing. There's very few times in life where being absolutely right is probably the most important thing. There are plenty of times where we could learn to keep quiet, keep our opinions to ourselves, and not be spurred on by the words of others. But I specifically, because I had a goal in mind, I was able to keep my mouth shut all day, not exert myself when I thought I was correct. And not that she was spoiling for a fight or being mean or trying to bring it out of me. She was great that day. My entire birthday week, really my entire life, she has gone out of her way to make life frictionless for me. And that's no small task because I invite friction a lot of times. But we both were really sweet to each other that day. And so by the end of the day, success. I won't go into detail. I know that would embarrass her and probably you guys probably just don't want to hear it. So at any rate, that's the sex advice. If you think there's a chance you may be getting sex, keep your mouth shut because all you can do by opening your mouth is probably screw it up for yourself. So that's our sex advice. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about was the deep, dark secret that CrossFit doesn't want you to know. I know we all know people who are in CrossFit. Maybe you're in CrossFit yourself. And you're really enthusiastic about it. And there's more going on there that a lot of people don't know about. And I've done some research. I was able to look into this and talk to some people. And I found out what's really going on with CrossFit, why it exists, and that they actually don't want you to know. CrossFit was founded by a guy named Alexander CrossFit. And he started CrossFit because he was addicted. He had a compulsive problem about talking dirty. He wanted to talk dirty all the time. And as you know, if you've tried to talk dirty in public, it's often frowned upon. People don't like you to talk dirty in public. And so he was frustrated by this. He was frustrated by his inability to use whatever words he wanted to say bad things when he wanted. And so he started CrossFit as a way to sneak in dirty talk into normal everyday conversation. And you're going to realize what I'm talking about really quick if you've ever listened to two CrossFitters talk, because what do they talk about all the time? Their wads and squatting and clean jerks and swinging around their kettlebells. But yeah, so a lot of filthy talk in CrossFit. I've never I've never heard a CrossFit conversation that didn't make me blush on some level. And so a lot of people kind of look at CrossFit and they're like, how'd this thing get so big? Why are people so into it? And it's because we all love to talk dirty, like Alexander CrossFit himself. And so that's why it exists. They don't want you to know that. That's not in the literature. But I am here to tell you because I believe it's a big, weird world, and I want to open its doors to you. I want to fling them open and expose the dirty, dirty skeleton underneath. And so that's kind of it for sex and CrossFit, which I thought about actually naming this podcast Sex and CrossFit, because who doesn't love that? But we actually have a larger topic, and it is the movie Coco. Have you guys seen Coco? I hope you have, because this podcast is going to be chock full of spoilers. So if you haven't seen it, turn it off, go watch Coco, and then come and turn it back on. But Coco was a Disney movie, and like a lot of Disney movies, it really kind of hooked into the way the world and our psyches and culture works. Even if it, on some level, I have to assume they realize they're doing this, but you can watch it and never pick up on the subtle messages and the subtle poignancies and significance events that are happening in these movies. But I love them for that. I didn't get to see Coco in the theater. My wife and my son went without me, and I was really disappointed. But I really wanted to see it. And here's one of the reasons why. One thing, if we're friends, I've told you about me that people know is, for whatever reason, I can't stop reading Christian Twitter. Now, I haven't called myself or thought of myself as a Christian for some time, but I really have this compulsive need to read what Christians on Twitter are saying. And I very rarely agree with much of it, but I still feel the need to listen to it, but read it. And so there's this one guy, I think he's a professor at a seminary maybe, but he was talking about how he really enjoyed Coco, and he was surprised because it lacked, and I'm going to paraphrase him and use the wrong words, so if he were to listen to this, he'd probably say, that's not what I said, and he'd probably be correct. But the gist of what he was saying was that Coco lacked this message of self, the importance of self, individuation that many of the Disney movies had. And when I heard that, I was really surprised, because Disney does that. That seems to be an important part of the Disney message. And so, which I'm completely, totally in favor in. So I was really surprised to hear that. So then I was really anxious to see Coco. So finally had to wait for it to come out on to rent. And so we rented it from iTunes and watched it. And I have to say, this guy didn't know what he was talking about. He picked up on one small, tiny part of the movie. He picked up on the setup and completely overlooked the rest of it, or maybe didn't understand the rest of it. But this movie talks about the importance of family, but in no way denigrates the importance of self. And so that's part of what I want to talk about today is how Disney, in this movie specifically, Coco, marries the concept of the importance of self and the importance of family in a way that is really what it's all about, and really what I'm all about, and really what this podcast is all about. So we're going to talk about that. But first, we're going to get a movie review of the movie Coco from my 5-year-old son, Jack Henry. Here we are with Blist, the podcast, very own in-home movie reviewer, Jack Henry Drury. Jack Henry, today we're talking about the movie Coco. Did you like the movie Coco?
Yes.
Now tell me, what did you like about it?
Can I tell you what I didn't like first?
Yeah, you can tell me what you didn't like about it.
I didn't like that they were dead because I thought my friend at school, Peter, died. But he didn't, but he just bleeded.
Okay, so your friend Peter at school got hurt, and you thought he was dead when he got hurt. And so movies like Coco that are about dead people kind of hit too close to home. So is there some stuff you like? First of all, Peter is okay, just so everybody knows.
Yeah, Peter's okay.
He's fine. And so that's good news. We're really glad Peter's okay. Tell us, what did you like about Coco, Jack Henry?
That they were a family, and he thought they weren't.
At first he didn't think he wanted to be in the family, did he?
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out being in a family is really, really important, isn't it?
Yeah, because you'll be with your other family.
Are you in a family?
Yes.
Who's in your family with you?
Daddy, Nana, Daddy, who's family, and Mommy, who is watching, and Nana, who is sleeping.
Mommy's watching us record this, and Nana's in her bedroom, right? Uh-huh. And Daddy's here with you. Who's your favorite person in the family?
Mom.
Are you sure?
And Dad.
Is Dad maybe the most favorite?
Mom.
What's the best part about being in a family?
Always staying together.
Always staying together? What a great answer.
Can I tell them what favorite song I like?
Yeah.
Come Together Right Now.
Come Together Right Now by the Beatles?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I know another song you like, and you do an impression from it. Do you want to do your Justin Timberlake impression for everybody?
Mm-mm-mm-mm.
You don't? Okay. Well, that's too bad, because I think everybody would really like it.
But okay.
That's fine. You want to do it? Okay. Let's hear it. It's gonna be me?
It's gonna be me.
That was perfect. Okay, one last question, and then we can be done, okay? So what we learned from Coco, which we're going to talk about in the rest of the podcast here, is that when you're part of a family, you have an opportunity to make the family better by being who you are and doing the stuff that you're good at. How do you make our family better? You, Jack Henry, how do you make your family that you're in better?
I'll see you in the next podcast.
That'll be in the next podcast. Okay, we don't want to give it all away at once, do we?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very much for doing this. Thank you for being our movie reviewer.
I have one more question.
Okay, what's your question?
Bye, kids at home.
Bye, kids at home. That's perfect.
What color is the sky? Ay, mi amor, ay, mi amor.
So that was our movie review of Coco with our in-house movie reviewer, Jack Henry Drury, who is my son. He's 5 years old. I had absolutely no idea what he was going to say, and that's kind of what it's like to live with a five-year-old, is you have no idea what they're going to say. But I thought it was some good material. I didn't know he was going to lay the groundwork for coming back next week, but maybe we'll have him back next week to tell us what it is that he adds to our family. But anyway, moving on with the movie Coco. Hopefully you've seen it. If you haven't, this podcast is going to be chock full of spoilers, so probably turn it off now, then go watch the movie, then come back. But as I said, Disney movies in general, I think, have a lot to say about what I have referred to in the past as traveling along the left-hand path. And this one specifically talks about what it's like to be a part of an institution or a society or a family or a group, and to see the importance of that, to remain a steadfast member of it, but also to challenge it by pursuing what it is that you love and bringing it back as a boon, as an elixir to the group. So let's just dive into the movie. It starts with a Mexican family, and this family, the matriarch of the family, this grandmother, she has her husband left her to pursue a life of music, and because of that, it damaged her greatly, and so it made her distrusting of musicians and music in general, and because of that, she kept music out of her family for generations, and when her husband, her provider, left, she had to do something to feed her family, and so she started making shoes. And I think it's no coincidence. The movie points out she could have made sequined underwear for luchadors. She could have made candy, but instead she chose to create shoes. And I think it's no coincidence she chose shoes, because it implies that she was looking for something grounded. She was looking for something down to earth. And what that we use in our daily lives is more grounded and down to earth than shoes. And so she put her family on the path of making shoes. And directed them away from music. And this ends up becoming a problem, an issue for the main character because he loves music. But I think it's important to point out that her distrust of music did not come from an evil place. It's not that she was a bad guy and wanted to deprive her family. Instead, she was trying to protect her family. So her distrust of music came from a place of fear. And so that's something we should point out. And so it became this this battle. In our main character's name is Miguel, and he is the great grandson of this lady who was betrayed by her husband. And so the influence, this desire to keep music out of the family, carries on over generations till we get to Miguel. And Miguel loves music, but he knows he can't play it because those are the rules of his household. And so he is immediately set in this dichotomous position of loving music but being presented with rules. And so these rules tell him, don't follow your heart. Especially if your heart leads you to music. Instead, follow the rules, stay away from music, make shoes, be a good boy. And so I think that's a message a lot of us are presented with in our life, is following your heart is going to be dangerous and it's going to be potentially damaging to the people around you. So don't do it. Instead, follow the rules, do exactly what your family, your government, your parents, the church, do whatever they say, because not doing that is potentially harmful, and those rules are there to protect you. But ultimately, I think those rules come from a place of fear, just like we saw with the great-grandmother and the family. And so Miguel learns over time that his great-grandfather that left was actually a character named De La Cruz, who is his hero. It's his musical hero. And so when he realizes that his great-grandfather is the person that he admires the most, and he didn't even know it, it kind of inspires him that he must follow his passion for music because it's in his blood, it's in his family. We see in a lot of stories, we see in a lot of mythology, that there are two energies that kind of drive us, a maternal energy and a paternal energy, a cosmic mother and a cosmic father. And so don't get hung up on the gender specifications there. They have absolutely nothing to do with physical gender. As a matter of fact, in this movie, the avatar of paternal energy is the great-grandmother, and the avatar of maternal energy is actually De La Cruz, the great-grandfather. And so paternal energy says, build up the system, cling to order, make things neat and tidy, and it encourages the people who are under it to belong to the family, to the culture. And the maternal energy says, be creative, follow your heart, do art, create things. And a true hero, a true artist, a true bliss follower needs to be the perfect mix of maternal and paternal energy. Because yes, you do need to belong to the system. You do need to be a part of society, part of a family, but you also need to follow your heart, and you need to pursue art and create things, because in doing that, you reinvigorate the system that you're a part of. The system doesn't get that. The system thinks, nope, follow the rules, do what you're supposed to do. But when the system encourages this or tells you to do this, what it doesn't realize is it's cutting itself off from growth. If the system instead would encourage you to be yourself and follow your heart, it would be giving itself the tools to grow. And so that becomes the story of the movie Coco in a lot of ways, is this young boy Miguel is a part of this system, but the system wants to hold him in and hold him back from his heart. And in doing so, they are ensuring their own demise instead of their own growth. So what happens is Miguel decides he's going to follow his heart, and he's going to do this by playing in this Day of the Dead festival. But to do that, he needs a guitar, and he doesn't have a guitar because his family won't allow him to have a guitar. He had one for a little while that he kept hidden, but his great-grandmother, when she discovered it, she destroyed it. And so he goes to the mausoleum where De La Cruz is buried, and it's where, and his guitar, De La Cruz's guitar, his famous guitar, is there in that mausoleum. So he goes to the mausoleum to steal it. He is led there in a way by a street dog named Dante, and he is given the dog that the name Dante, and he gets in trouble for this because his great grandmother tells him, if you name a street dog, it will start following you home. It will never leave you alone. And I'm sure if you're well read at all, or even moderately well read, you recognize the name Dante. Dante was a character from the Divine Comedy. And in the first volume of the Divine Comedy, called The Inferno, Dante descends into hell, or the underworld. So, in this dog has the name of someone who's been to the underworld. So that kind of tells us what's coming. He is going to guide Miguel into the underworld, and he's already guiding him because he is a part of Miguel going to this mausoleum and getting this guitar. So it seems important that Miguel's grandmother tells him not to name Dante, because once she names Dante, he will start coming around all the time. Basically, he won't leave him alone. And so, basically, Dante in this moment kind of represents Miguel's instincts, his gut, his subconscious direction, if you will. And so Miguel's grandmother's kind of telling him, don't start listening to your heart. Don't start listening to your instincts, because once you do that, they won't leave you alone. And I think that's probably good advice if you don't want to be connected to yourself, if you want to be fractured, if you don't want to be whole, is that once you start engaging that part of yourself, it's very hard to turn it off. And I think we'll find that institutions often don't want you to follow your heart and engage your instincts, because they will often lead you in a different direction than the institution would have you go. And so we see this immediately with Miguel. This dog Dante leads him to this mausoleum, which becomes his passageway to the underworld. And it's four walls like a mausoleum. It's enclosed. And so in that sense, it is a bordered sacred space that it's like the Axis Mundi. It's where it's like the cross of Jesus. It becomes the place. It becomes the spot where a person is able to transition from his world, the world of the conscious, into a different world, the world of the unconscious. And so that's what Miguel does. When Miguel makes it to the underworld, he starts to meet a variety of characters that, just like Dante, serve as guides. Some of them are family members of his that have deceased. One, though, is a character named Hector, who Hector is he's kind of wily. He's kind of unpredictable. So in that sense, he's almost kind of like a trickster archetype. But as we see, as the movie progresses, he has a much more important role to play in Miguel's life. And so Miguel discovers that the longer he's in the underworld, then the less alive he becomes. His flesh starts fading away, and he starts becoming a skeleton, which is how all of his family members who are already there are represented. And so this is we see this when people follow their bliss, or they follow the path of enlightenment, is sometimes you go down into your subconscious to figure these things out about yourself, and you're so in love with them, you enjoy them so much that you don't want to leave that world, and you have to leave that world. When you leave that world, you're able to use your compassion and use what you've gained to make the world a better place. But some people don't want to do that. Some people just want to enrich their lives. And so they make music just for themselves, or they make art just for themselves, or they never share the thing that they're creating. And so just creating it becomes something they do to feed themselves, but then they stay stuck. And so that's what Miguel is in danger of. He's going to lose touch with the real world, with the conscious world, the world of flesh, if he stays in the underworld too long. And he doesn't want to do that. He still feels called to the world above because he wants to share his gift. That's the whole reason he's here in the underworld to begin with, is because he was looking for a way to share his gift. He touched the guitar, strummed it, and here he is. Boom. So to navigate his way around the underworld, Hector paints Miguel's face like a skeleton. And so now he appears like the Denzians of the underworld. And so this, I think when we make attempts to follow our bliss, we start to see it reflected all around us, even in our own features, our own appearance. So when you become obsessed with an expression, you become obsessed with what it is you love to do and the thing that is your highest enthusiasm, you will see it everywhere. It will be reflected in everything that you do. So Hector leads Miguel to De La Cruz, the man he thinks is his grandfather, and De La Cruz is really happy to see him, and he's thrilled that he has a grandson who's such a talented musician. And we learn after they're united that De La Cruz isn't actually Miguel's grandfather. Hector is, and Hector is not in the fondly remembered position that De La Cruz is, because De La Cruz stole all of Hector's songs and then poisoned him. And so Hector's family, Miguel's family, Miguel's great-grandmother, thinks that Hector left them to go be a musician, but in truth, he died unbeknownst to them. He had been poisoned by De La Cruz. And so there's a little bit of intrigue. There's some twists and turns there. But basically, in this moment, you could have watched this and thought, man, yeah, the great-grandmother is right. Music really tore their family apart. It caused Hector to leave his responsibilities. But in this moment, we see music and following your heart and following your bliss redeemed, because Hector didn't leave because he wanted to, because he was following his music. He was actually on his way back to his family when De La Cruz poisoned him. And so because of that, he never made it to his family. His family thought his love of music was responsible for him being gone, but in truth, it wasn't. In truth, he was poisoned and killed by this bad guy, De La Cruz. And so when Miguel finds this, he's pretty wary of De La Cruz. So De La Cruz takes Hector and Miguel, and he traps them both in a giant well. He drops them into a hole so that they can never leave. And Miguel is about to turn into a skeleton. And Hector, we have learned, because no one remembers him fondly in the real world, he's about to fade away forever. So he is about to move on to the second death. To where he is not just a skeleton walking around the land of the dead. He's about to actually be annihilated. And so there's a lot of danger. But then Dante shows up, and Dante rescues them both. And in doing this, Dante becomes a more mythologicalized version or mythologized version of himself. He gains wings. And so we know in mythology, when a character or an item has wings, it means that represents the soul. So Dante has really gone from a guide character to a spiritual guide. He was already kind of a spirit guide in the way this was working, but we have seen the full fruition of his form. He has moved into his final form, as you might say, if you were playing Pokemon, I think. But anyway, so there's kind of a climax, a fight scene with De La Cruz. The good guys win. Miguel is allowed to return to the land of the living. And there he kind of takes back the news that, hey, this guy that you thought abandoned you to follow music didn't really do that. He actually loved you guys, and he was taken from you unfairly. And so when the family learns this, they change their attitude. The great-grandmother changes, or I'm sorry, Miguel's grandmother, changes her attitude about music. She realizes, oh, I've been blaming the wrong thing. It was actually this really jerky person responsible for my husband not, or it would have been her grandfather, not coming back, when in reality it was him and not music at all. And so we can forgive music. We can forgive the desire that Miguel has to follow his passion. And so Miguel does. He becomes a musician. And you see in the last scenes of the movie that this family is revitalized by Miguel's gift. They're no longer just shoemakers. They're no longer scared of music. They're all... Miguel is still in the family. The family is important to him, but so is music. And so he's allowed to exist inside of this community, but revitalize it by being the best version of himself. And so I loved this movie. I like most Disney movies that I see. I never watched Disney movies before until we had a five-year-old, and now I see them and I'm like, oh, well, these are really important, powerful movies. And if Jack Henry is going to be hit with messages, I love that he's being hit with the message that you can be in your family and be an important part of it and revitalize it by being the best version of yourself. And I think that's not only a great message for five-year-olds, that's a great message for 35-year-olds, 45-year-olds, 55-year-olds, because the older we get set in our ways, we get set in our position and our personas, and we think, well, I'm a cog in this machine, and I'm just going to keep doing that. But if you put aside your cogness and you think, what is it that I love to do? What is it that exists inside my heart that needs to get out? And then you work on getting it out, then you have the potential to revitalize your family, your city, culture, society, the church, the place where you work, all of the places that you interact with. If you let them have a taste of who you really are, you have the potential to revive them in a meaningful way. And so eventually one day, Disney will make a movie about your life and how you changed everything around you. And what an incredible legacy to be a Disney character. So I don't know that we could all hope for anything better than that. So anyway, love the movie Coco. This was me talking about it a little bit, just kind of explaining what I saw there and how it wasn't a departure from Disney's past values, but instead re-upping on them. And I love it. So that's me talking about Coco. That's it, guys. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you've seen Coco, I hope it means something more to you now that you get a little bit of insight into what's actually happening there and what it could potentially mean for you and for the world you live in. So anyway, we'll be back next week with another episode of Blist the Podcast, where we enjoy doing this. We're happy to be here. We will continue to be here for a while. So see you guys. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.